From News Talk 580 1059 KMJ, this is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
This week on the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. With 12 regional reserve banks, the Federal Reserve is the central bank of the United States. Each bank gives an individualized perspective of the economy and the economic activity across the country and is able to recognize the needs of its particular region. The community development programs of the Federal Reserve promote access to financial markets, identify the needs of underserved communities, conducts research, and identifies emerging issues. So how can the Federal Reserve help low and moderate communities like those in the San Joaquin Valley, especially hard hit during the Great Recession? We'll talk with Leilani Barnett, Regional Manager for Community Development of the Federal Reserve Bank in San Francisco. We'll also hear from Mike Dozier, Executive Director of the Office of Community and Economic Development at Fresno State, Ben Duran, the President and CEO of the Great Valley Center, President of EDC Director of Business Expansion and Retention, Victor Brugasca, and Professor Antonio Avalos, Chair of the Economics Department at Cal State Fresno. The Federal Reserve does community development? Who knew?
Additional funding for the Maddie Report made possible by a grant from Paramount Agricultural Companies, growing healthy food for you and your family.
From the California Channel at the State Capitol, Valley PBS, and the Maddie Institute, it's the Maddie Report with Executive Director of the Maddie Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. Today we're coming from the Valley PBS studios in Fresno. The Federal Reserve is regularly in the news on issues of national significance, but most would probably be surprised to learn that the Fed is also engaged at the local level, doing community development work. What are the Federal Reserve's community development programs and how do they impact local communities? Our guest is Leilani Barnett, the Regional Manager of Community Development at the Federal Reserve Bank in San Francisco. Welcome to the Maddie Report.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So usually when we hear about the Federal Reserve, it's in relation to interest rates or regulating banks or the economy. It's national, not local issues. Why is the Federal Reserve involved in community development?
Well, our Community Development Department originated from the Community Reinvestment Act, CRA, which was a response to redlining. And redlining was a practice by which banks and financial institutions, prior to the enactment of the CRA in 1977, categorically exempted certain neighborhoods from their investments. So they would literally draw big red circles on maps and say, we're not going to invest in that neighborhood. And it didn't have to do with assessing the risk of a particular applicant. It was just an all-out exemption from extending credit to those neighborhoods.
So if that's a poor neighborhood, it's going to become more poor.
Exactly.
So how does the Community Reinvestment Act, the CRA that you referred to, how does it work?
So the three agencies in our country that regulate the banks examine banks annually to see that they are investing in the low-income neighborhoods that are within their districts. And the three agencies are the Federal Reserve, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, OCC, and the FDIC. Mm-hmm. And we make sure that they're not categorically excluding those neighborhoods. Now, it doesn't say that they have to make any investment. They do have to take risk into consideration, and it has to make business sense, but they just can't exclude an entire area.
So it's kind of a good faith effort to do some loaning in that area, not an absolute exclusion.
Right.
Well, what's the enforcement if you're finding they're acting in bad faith? They are redlining.
So there are measures, and they each bank gets a certain ranking based on the extent to which they are investing in low and moderate income neighborhoods, and there can be serious regulatory actions against them if they don't meet those requirements.
Okay, so you're with the San Francisco Reserve Bank. There, mm-hmm. We talked about 12 different reserve banks. You're with San Francisco. What's the geographic reach of the San Francisco Reserve Bank?
So the San Francisco Federal Reserve Bank covers the western territory, the western states, including California, Oregon, Washington, Utah, Nevada, Hawaii, American Samoa, Guam, and a couple other states.
So you probably like those trips to Hawaii when you got to deal with issues over there.
Exactly.
I'm sure. We're going to talk about community development. First of all, what exactly does that mean?
So initially, when our community development department started, we were really focusing on the CRA requirements. But since that time, we've begun looking much more holistically at the needs of low and moderate income communities, including issues around affordable housing, education, workforce development, healthy communities, family financial resiliency. We deal with issues such as medical deserts, areas areas where families don't have access to health care. We deal with food deserts where people don't have access to fresh foods and groceries and bank deserts as well.
So you're now taking a much broader look. When we talk about community development, it's more than just economic per se. It's all these other issues. And how do you tie them all together? What's your argument to tie all these things together?
Well, when we look at different regions, we see that many of these issues overlap. If you look at a low-income neighborhood, it often has low educational attainment. It has poor health outcomes. It may not have good access for its residents to grocery stores, medical access, and the like. So what we see is that in the past decades, sometimes some of these efforts have been rather siloed. Maybe public health will work separately from community development. But really, the issues are integrated, and it's important to take this holistic approach.
Yeah, it's interesting because we've had other programs on the Affordable Care Act and the question of whether or not providing health insurance is going to lead to healthier outcomes. And one of the arguments is, well, maybe not, because if you're living in a community that has a lot of air pollution or bad water quality or you're not exercising, it doesn't matter how good the doctor is, you're still going to be sick. So that's kind of the way you approached it, sounds as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how does the Federal Reserve Bank choose which communities to work in?
So we really have it be community driven. So we don't come into a community and say, well, this is what we think you should do to improve your low and moderate income communities, so much as have communities reach out to us. We have government agencies of different departments reach out to us, sometimes regional community-based organizations, and they want to partner and see how can we work together to alleviate issues.
Any examples of how you've done that in the past?
So recently, the public health director of Tulare County, as an example, reached out and said, we have an issue with food deserts. There's many areas in Tulare County where people aren't able to access fresh and healthy foods. So what we did was we looked at lots of different successful models of alleviating food deserts throughout the country. And we had a convening and invited a cross-sector group of people in Tulare, government folks, business.
And you wanted to define food deserts just briefly?
Food deserts are areas where low and moderate income communities, they can't get to fresh and healthy foods. There are no grocery stores, and maybe there's some corner markets, but they don't have produce. They don't have healthy foods to eat, so it's impacting people's health.
So you're bringing best practices into Tulare County to show them how they can maybe alleviate that problem.
Yes, and financial options as well for investing.
We're talking with Leilani Barnett, the Regional Manager of Community Development for the Federal Reserve Bank in San Francisco. So understand the Fed has a Community Development Research Division. What are their areas of research, and what are some of their findings?
So we've really looked holistically at what are the best practices as far as what is working in community development. And we recently published a book on this topic, and it's available on our website for free, but it really measures what the outcomes are of various efforts. And what we're seeing is the efforts that are very cross-sectoral, that include academia, government, private sector, and nonprofit together, and include policy-level work as well as really systems-level change, are the ones that are most effective. A lot of times in the last 30, 40 years, efforts around community development have been rather siloed, like the public health and community development example. But the efforts that bring different institutions together around shared common goals are most effective, and those that really measure the outcomes and are data driven.
So best practices, which then you can share with communities that need this assistance.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, the Fed also tries to bring community development capital into communities. What are some of the sources for community development capital?
So there's really three main sources. One is community development financial institutions, CDFIs, and those are like nonprofit banks. They get money at very low interest rates from the U.S. Treasury, and they turn around and invest those in ways that benefit communities. Some of the things they focus on are new community facilities. They finance new health clinics, especially in underserved areas. They finance fresh foods as far as refrigeration for convenience stores.
So if a local bank isn't available, these community development loan funds are established to take care of these problems?
Well, and the banks invest in the CDFIs as well for CRA credit. And so it's an easy way for
going
the banks.
Going back to that act again.
That's right. Yeah. It's an easy way for the banks to meet their CRA requirements without taking on the risk directly because they invest through the CDFIs.
Okay. Well, let's talk about about an area that's been hard hit by kind of a double whammy, mm-hmm. by the housing crisis and the drought in the Central Valley. Mm-hmm. What are the pressing concerns that you see existing in the Central Valley today?
There's a lot of concerns in the Central Valley. Certainly the high level of poverty. We have about 25% of folks in the Central Valley that are falling below the poverty line. And in part, that's because of the lower educational attainment levels. Not as many people graduating from college struggle with high school graduation levels. We also have issues of chronic health, poor air quality leading to high levels of asthma and other chronic health conditions that are really keeping people from going to work, from being able to go to school and graduate.
Yeah, so all this ties in. We're going to talk more about that later, about how it all ties in. Health issues tie into economic issues. But we're also seeing maybe some, let's be a little positive here, mm-hmm. about some emerging opportunities in the Valley. What are some emerging opportunities that you're seeing in the Valley?
There's some new state funds as well that are coming to fund community development efforts. Prop 41, the vet housing bill, is going to provide $600 million in affordable housing for veterans and their families in the form of supportive housing and other affordable housing. And there's a lot of vets that are from the Central Valley.
And that's specifically, that's a state fund.
It is. It's a statewide.
What about cap and trade? Is there any money there?
Absolutely. Within cap and trade, there's $130 million that's going to be allocated for affordable housing and sustainable communities. And certainly cities that have transit will be eligible for those, because that's really focused on greenhouse gas reductions and placing affordable housing where there's transit.
Oh, okay. So one of the problems, obviously, you were mentioning earlier, is, you know, we have poor, less educated communities like the Central Valley. There's a proliferation of these payday lenders in areas where there's no banks. What is the Federal Reserve doing to promote financial literacy? So the people aren't taken advantage
right.
by those folks.
That's right. Well, it's interesting. Recently, the city of Fresno enacted a payday ordinance that limited the expansion of additional payday lenders. What we've seen is that very traditionally, under CRA, there's been efforts to do financial literacy. But that alone hasn't really changed people's behavior. If you go and tell somebody who's low or moderate income that they need to save money, that's not necessarily going to happen. And so what we see is more effective is if you do the financial literacy, and then at the same time you have an opt-in where a family can choose at that time to save a certain percentage of their funds towards something like a child savings account for college, mm-hmm. that has much better results in actually achieving savings. And
how do you access that community, though? I mean, you do it through what? Through churches or through...
Faith-based partnerships are very effective, and certainly community-based organizations that are providing other services to low-income families and partnering with those.
Okay. We're talking with Leilani Barnett, the Regional Manager of Community Development for the Federal Reserve Bank in San Francisco. So let's talk about the Federal Reserve's Bank's Healthy Communities Initiative. What's that all about?
Well, it's a partnership with Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and it's really looking at how can public health and community development work more closely together, because what we see is that the U.S. spends more per capita on health care than any other country in the world, and yet when we look at life expectancy, the U.S. is ranked 43rd.
And yeah, my understanding in the numbers, I think we per capita are twice as high as the other industrialized countries.
That's right.
What we're spending.
So much more, and yet the outcomes aren't matching up with that. And that's because only 10% of what impacts our health is related to health care. 60% is related to our behavior. And one thing that shapes our behavior is the built environment around us. We're going to be more likely to exercise if there's bike lanes, if there's walking trails, yep. if there's sidewalks.
I think you know how much I support walking trails, so I'm very attentive. So you think those kinds of things, though, in communities actually help?
Absolutely. And they're critical. As an example, in the Central Valley, a person's life expectancy varies by 21 years, depending on which zip code they live in. And so a person's zip code is a better predictor of their health than their genetic code. And that also has to do with access to things like fresh foods, access to jobs and transit to be able to get to work. And
so you see, again, it's this holistic approach where you're looking at exercise, nutrition, and everything. Because if you don't have a healthy person, they can't get a job. They can't get a job. It hurts the economy. So I want to connect that for you. I don't want to do that for you. Let you do it. How do you connect then health to the mission of the Federal Reserve Bank?
Well, really, employers need a healthy workforce in order to succeed. And health impacts the regional economy because it does impact high school graduation rates, college graduation rates, gross domestic product. So it's important on a regional and a national level.
So going back to health, for example, students who come to work, come to school and they haven't had a good breakfast or something like that, they're not able to learn, therefore they don't get an education, therefore they don't get employed.
Right. And not only that, but we see that people that have graduated from college adopt much healthier behaviors. So there's a real disparity between healthy behaviors in folks that don't make it through high school and college and folks that do. So in some ways, investing in college and education is a prescription for health. And much the same way as investing in housing is a prescription for health.
And let me just connect the characteristics of neighborhoods you were talking about. Could you give that a little more detail? What specific characteristics are problematic in certain neighborhoods?
Yeah. So neighborhoods where there are no sidewalks, you can't walk around. Neighborhoods where people, families feel very unsafe, they're going to keep their kids indoors. Even if there is a park, no one's going to want to go to the park because they don't feel safe. Neighborhoods without bike lanes, people aren't going to want to take that risk. And if there's high crime rate in particular, then they're not going to want to go in bike.
And then you also deal with the food deserts as well, health, getting access to healthy food. So there's also some discussion about how your work in community development interacts with the Affordable Care Act. How do the two interact?
So under the Affordable Care Act in California, and it does vary by state, but in California, nonprofit hospitals are required to provide community benefits now and that meet community needs. And those community needs are determined by the process of completing a community health needs assessment. So under ACA, it's important that a wide range of stakeholders be involved in their hospital systems' community health needs assessments.
Can you give me an idea what would be in that assessment?
So there might be, for example, identification of asthma as a really big issue in the region. And there are some upstream preventative ways to address asthma in the home by alleviating dust mites and things like that. And ACA encourages a look at upstream interventions so that not as much is spent on health care.
It's kind of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, really, is the approach, it sounds like.
Right.
So I've read some post-ACA Affordable Care Act enactment that some hospitals are closing. Is that creating now medical deserts? Or we have food deserts?
It is a challenge. There's been a number of hospitals that have closed, especially in rural areas. But there's a tremendous amount of funding available for new federally qualified health clinics to be built, FQHCs. And those serve low-income folks primarily through Medicaid. And so these CDFIs, Community Development Financial Institutions, have a lot of funds available to invest in the construction of new FQHCs.
And so that should help alleviate that problem to some extent. We're talking with Leilani Barnett, the Regional Manager of Community Development for the Federal Reserve Bank in San Francisco. So when people think of the Federal Reserve, they probably don't think about small business. What does the Federal Reserve do to help small business?
In the area of small business development, we've worked a lot with banks because oftentimes a small business might apply for a loan from a bank and get turned down. And that's an opportunity then for the bank to refer small businesses to a lot of the small businesses to many resources available to them that are free. So there's
Is there a problem, though, with some people would say that maybe those small businesses shouldn't be getting loans because they're financially risky. What's the argument to those people who kind of challenge that and say the government should stay out of being involved in this, let the banks, let the financial markets decide who to invest with?
Yeah, and usually it is appropriate that the bank is rejecting that loan applicant. They've determined it's too risky, and usually the small business could benefit at that point from doing some more work on developing their business plan, for example, or getting some mentorship from somebody who has already successfully successfully grown a business. And there's things like the Small Business Development Centers provides free technical assistance to small business owners to help them with developing their business plans. And there's a program throughout the nation called SCORE that partners very experienced entrepreneurs with new small business owners.
Yeah, I think it's really critical. A lot of businesses that fail repeat the mistakes of others. And if they had just done a little more research, done a more thorough business plan or a marketing plan, they dramatically increase their chances of success. But there are a lot of resources available for entrepreneurs and small businesses. I mean, I'm sure that a lot of entrepreneurs probably feel, particularly with the web, feel overwhelmed. So how do you focus them on the ones that are really important and not this information overload?
Right. So CDFIs, again, are an opportunity for that because they provide microloans. And a lot of times the banks are focused on larger loan amounts. But a small business, when they're just starting out, it might be more prudent for them to take out a very small loan. And so these CDFIs have funds specifically aimed at doing that. And then the Small Business Development Centers and SCORE are great resources.
Well, one of the other issues is, so even if you have a small business, you've got a good idea and you've got access to capital, you may not have access to a good workforce. Do you do anything to help develop a good workforce so that small business person has someone to hire?
Yeah, and that's a really important issue. And with workforce development, what we've seen is really focusing on education is worthwhile and an investment in education.
At what level? I mean, are you focusing on K through 12 or junior college, all of the above?
All of the above. There's a great model that is going on now in Fresno as an example, and it's focused on cradle to career. At the time that the child is born, really getting that child ready to enter kindergarten by focusing on quality preschool. And there's CDFIs that are focused on investing specifically on kindergarten, on preschools rather. And so starting at that early age and then having a really cross-sector group working towards improving the educational outcomes. The Fresno Strive model is based off of a national model called Strive, and it looks at how businesses, the school system, government agencies, community-based organizations can all collaborate to improve educational outcomes. And
I think it's important to a lot of folks. I mean, obviously, I think almost everyone would agree, whether Republican or Democrat, conservative or liberal, that really a job is the best poverty program. You know, having actually getting a job and being employable is obviously a big part of that. Let me kind of change focus a little bit and talk about vacant and foreclosed properties. I know you're involved with that as well. What do you do? What are your strategies to combat vacant and foreclosed properties?
So we've really seen a decrease in vacant and foreclosed properties after the real estate recovery, but we're still seeing a tremendous number of properties that aren't being well maintained. And there's a lot of tension between landlords and tenants. Now we have some institutional landlords buying up thousands of units in some cities. Mm-hmm. And really it takes a cross-sector, very close collaboration between banks, between the landlords and property management firms, government entities like the city code enforcement divisions and community development and police.
And your concern there is your vacant and foreclosed properties obviously going to hurt the economic development in that area near that vacant property.
Right.
What about, a little bit different, what about affordable housing on the other end of the continuum? What are you doing to increase the amount of affordable housing?
So we do a number of workshops around some of the financing mechanisms for affordable housing, like low-income tax credits and new markets tax credits, and work with banks to invest as through their CRA requirements.
Is that as big an issue in the Valley as it is, let's say, in San Francisco and on the coast?
Well, it's interesting because in the Central Valley, it's known to have affordable housing, yet it's all relative because we do have this very high unemployment rate relative to the coast and also low wages.
So the income and wages are lower, but housing prices are lower, but that's still not affordable.
Right. Many people can't afford to even rent a home, much less own one.
We've only got about 30 seconds left in the segment. I just want to ask you this one last question. Going forward in the next year, what do you see the most important programs you're going to be working on?
Well, I want to let the community drive that and come to me with issues and challenges, but really looking holistically at healthy communities and how we can work together to improve.
I'll read that as trails. Well, I want to thank Leilani Barnett, the Regional Manager for Community Development at the Federal Reserve Bank in San Francisco, for joining us.
Up next, what can be done to improve community development here in the Valley? We'll talk to Professor Antonio Avalos, Chair of the Economics Department at Cal State Fresno. Victor Bribiska, the Fresno EDC Director of Business Expansion and Retention, Ben Duran, the President and CEO of the Great Valley Center, and Mike Dozier, the Executive Director of the Office of Community and Economic Development at Fresno State.
From News Talk 580-1059 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Are the Federal Reserve's efforts to improve community development working here in the Valley? Now joining us for a discussion are Victor Bribiska with the Fresno Economic Development Corporation, Professor Antonio Avalos, the Chair of the Economics Department at Cal State Fresno, Ben Duran, the President and CEO of the Great Valley Center, and Mike Dozier, the Executive Director of the Office of Community and Economic Development at Fresno State. Welcome all of you to the Matty Report.
Thank you.
So, Ben Duran with the Great Valley Center, let me start with you first. As we've heard in the earlier segments, the Federal Reserve's community development program engages in lots of things. Which one do you think is particularly important in the short or near term for the Valley, and why?
Well, you know, when I look at the work that they've done, actually there are two that come to mind that I think marry very nicely: affordable housing and healthy communities. I think the notion of creating affordable housing that has all of the components of really healthy communities that allow people to thrive in those communities is really, really important. I was at a function that they threw up in Stockton, and the Family Health Care Network out of Tulare had a wonderful presentation on how they had married health care with affordable housing, and working with the affordable housing folks and having the health, not only the health care people come in and provide services and education, but also providing places for people to exercise and people to interact and to connect. So if I were to pick the two, at least from my perspective, it would be this notion of affordable housing being married to healthy communities.
Victor Bribiska with the Fresno EDC, what are your thoughts? When you look at all the stuff that the Fed does in community development, what strikes you as something particularly helpful in the short or near term?
In the short term, I think that workforce development would be one of those priorities. I mean, it's needed in the Valley so that we can compete for those high-wage, high-growth jobs, especially with those larger companies and industries that are looking to relocate here in the Central Valley. Unfortunately, we don't have the type of workforce that they're looking for. So an investment into that.
Do you see that a lot? And you see companies saying, gee, we'd love to relocate in the Central Valley, but we just don't have a qualified workforce, or you don't have a qualified workforce?
That's correct. The qualifications, we have a workforce, we just don't have them qualified for those particular jobs.
Right.
If you come up 99 from Selma to Fresno, you'll see all those heavy equipment technicians all the way through. Why don't we have them? We have the labor force, we just don't have the right education or the workforce that they're looking for.
Professor Avalos, what do you see when you look at all the stuff that the Fed is doing in community development? What strikes you as something particularly helpful in the short or near term?
Well, I would like to address the long term, and I would have to agree with Ben. I've read some reports by non-for-profit organizations, and they are saying that there has been an increased demand for services, especially drought-related. So, I mean, when you consider that investing in a house is among the most important investments in your life, and at the same time that, as probably you have seen, this millennial generation is not buying homes, I think that we need to address this, very important aspect of life in the Valley.
Yeah. Mike Dozier is with the Office of Economic and Community Development at Fresno State. You've been working in community development for most of your career. What do you see when you look at the Fed's efforts in this regard? What do you see as particularly helpful?
Well, I'm going to take this in a little different slant. I get to be last here, so I'm going to do it that way. But I look at collaboration as like a basketball game. Sometimes you're the player, sometimes you're the coach, sometimes you're the cheerleader, and sometimes you're just watching. And so in this particular case, I believe, along with Ben, that affordable housing and healthy communities is where they should be concentrating their efforts. And so if they're doing that, there are other team players within the Valley that are doing doing the other things. I think that where they have their biggest strength is in affordable housing, and I'd throw in neighborhood revitalization as a second tier for them.
Yeah, it's particularly necessary now that the state's kind of cut off a lot of those funding sources. So the Fed's become very important. Victor, I want to go back to you for a second.
Yes.
With the Fresno EDC and ask you about local programs. Are there any particularly successful community development efforts in the Valley by the Fed Reserve or others that you've seen?
Sure, absolutely. I know that at least in the EDC, we do host the AmeriCorps Vista program. And under the program, we created a project that's called the CRA Collaborative, the Community Reinvestment Act Collaborative, which is part of the Federal Reserve Bank. It was housed at ClearPoint, and now it's moved on to Fresno State. And the intent of this is to work with banks, financial institutions, local community partners, and nonprofits to help bring investment into the area. Currently, there are over 50 members. Unfortunately, our Vista this year termed out, but we're currently looking for someone else to take on this particular collaborative to lead it because it is needed. All the members are very active. It covers Bakersfield all the way to Stockton. And most importantly, we have every single member is active in this thing. So the banks are always calling us saying, hey, what kind of projects are you looking at? The collaborative coordinator at the time would always send us his emails. What kind of projects do you need? What kind are you looking for? Do you have any community development or community investments that you want the banks to look at? So those are, at least that's the one I can see right now, and that's the one that has the need right now.
You know, Professor Avalos, as we've heard, just from Victor and also from our earlier segments from the Federal Reserve, they really try to bring capital development money into communities. Is finding community development capital, a challenge for the Valley?
I think so. I mean, entrepreneurship in the Valley is alive and well, but the increased uncertainty, for issues like the drought and others, well, it's making investment a challenge. And this is why, coming back to your previous question, I would like to mention that we also have very successful efforts by the so-called community development financial institutions, the CDFIs, which are typically not-for-profit organizations certified not by the Federal Reserve, but by the U.S. Department of Treasury. So they work in market niches that are underserved by the traditional financial institutions. So for example, they provide mortgage financing for low-income and first home buyers, but also for non-for-profit developers, flexible underwriting, technical assistance, and the like. So in Fresno, we have, the Valley Small Business Development Corporation and the Fresno CDFI. So it is a challenge, but we understand the challenge and we're working on it. I think there are very important institutions already addressing the issue.
I want to ask Mike Dozier with OECD at Fresno State. What are you seeing in terms of the Fed's Small Business Lending Fund? Does that help? What about the Small Business Administration? What about tax cuts? What are we doing to help small business?
Well, I don't know a whole lot about the tax cuts, but I do know what SBA is doing, and SBDC in a more of a training mode. The capital that's coming in is short. It's microloans, small loans, things of that nature.
We define microloans.
Microloans be less than $10,000,
mm-hmm.
So they're for smaller businesses, and so the venture capital is what we really have a hard time with here, and bringing it in. The Lyle Center does a good job with the venture forum and bringing it in. I think that there's a lot of opportunity in this area. And SBA is doing a very good job in trying to bring businesses together, and they've worked with the Federal Reserve, collaborated on what can be done for the future here.
I'm just wondering, what can the Fed do to help bring venture capital into the Valley, Mike? What do you think? Is there anything they can do? Talk to people? Set up meetings?
I don't think that's where their strength lies, is in the venture capital side of it. They have the tax credits and things like that are things that they can work with. There is one area that I think that we need to keep our eye on, and that's cap and trade. And that's statewide.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I'm seeing in the legislation, it looks like we're going to get shortcutted. And this is where the money belongs. And it's and the way the legislature has been set up, it's geared more towards the Bay Area than it is here because of transportation needs.
Well, some would say, wait a second, you know, cap and trade, $250 million of that is going to high-speed rail. And that could be, you know, economic development in the Valley. Mm-hmm. But how would you connect those dots there? How would you say, excluding high-speed rail, how would you connect the dots with cap and trade money and community development? How do you connect those two dots?
Well, what's the purpose of cap and trade? To take polluting industries or industries that are paying for the pollution that they're creating, and that money is to go to the people that are being affected by it. Who's being affected by it? It's low income, and it's low income in the Valley. Where is the worst air quality in California? Arguably, it's here. So if we have the low income, we have the disadvantaged communities, and we have the health issues related to it, then why shouldn't we get the lion's share of that?
Yeah. Let me transition a little bit. It's kind of a takeoff on that to Ben Duran with the Great Valley Center. One area of community development that the Federal Reserve works on is preserving affordable housing for low and moderate income households. And there are lots of those in the Valley, frankly. As housing prices begin to recover, what are the challenges and opportunities when it comes to affordable housing in the Valley, Ben?
Well, I think one of the things that we have found, even as the housing market starts to rebound, is that we're still seeing that people with a lot of money are still able to kind of control the market, and so we're seeing eligible buyers, medium to low income buyers, who are finally able to maybe get into the market, not finding inventory. So I think that when the economic downturn came, and you started to see, you know, not a lot of construction taking place, we now have this shortage of inventory. As a result of that, the affordable housing advocates who have come in and have started setting up these affordable to moderate housing programs actually are creating some wonderful models that are really community. There are literally communities within communities, and you'll see examples of them in Sacramento and Stockton, and probably in the southern part of the Valley, though I'm not as familiar there. But what we're seeing affordable housing facilities where they're, as I was mentioning earlier, they literally are building communities that are walkable, that are connected to transportation. They are literally building facilities where people literally want to go there and move. You know, back when I was a kid, if you lived in affordable housing, you were literally the person who was the most disadvantaged. It's changing now because of the infusion, I think, of some well-positioned and socially conscious developers who are recognizing, you know what, we can make some dollars, but at the same time, we can create these communities that turn out to be more positive for the Valley here. And as a result of that, I think some of them are, in fact, addressing the challenges that are coming up as a result of housing.
You know, it's interesting. You kind of make me think of something. Professor Avalos, I want to ask you a question about quality of life. How does mm-hmm. that impact economic health? It's kind of like dealing with a health issue, but if you improve quality of life in a community, what impact does that have on the economic health of the community?
Well, I mean, there is a growing body of literature addressing that. And, of course, I mean, there are many angles. But one in particular that comes to mind is the impact on productivity. If people are ill and they're still missing, you know, hours of work or days of work, that is clearly not a good thing for anybody, not for them, you know, as employees, not for the company. And if you aggregate, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of people going on, you know, through the same situation, you know, could be asthma or any other related problem. I mean, we have a serious problem because, once productivity falls, things don't look good for in the present or in the future. So I think this idea of, addressing these amenities, you know, I'm talking about, yes, the air quality, but also the lack of specialty, doctors, the lack of, green areas and others. It's a very important issue to address if we are serious about attracting business and retaining businesses in the Valley.
Yeah, I want to kind of switch gears a little bit here and ask Mike Dozier a question from the Fresno State EDC. I'm sorry. I get my E's confused here. Office of Economic and Community Development. I want to ask you about the proliferation of payday lenders, which is another, frankly, scourge in some communities, areas where there are no banks, and they, frankly, prey on poor, less educated folks. What's being done by the Federal Reserve and others to promote financial literacy?
You know, I really don't know what's being done by the feds or the states in this area. I've heard a lot of discussion, but I've not seen anything tangent come out of it. But I can tell you that it's a symptom. It's not causing the problem. It is something that occurs as a result of the issues that we have. We have low income. We have low wage jobs. I see a lot of youth getting caught up in this. And I've seen it personally. I've seen my own family member get caught up into this, and it's not fun.
Let me ask Professor Avalos. Have you seen things in terms of financial literacy to help poor folks less educated understand, what it means to take out a loan that has a high interest rate?
I mean, the Federal Reserve, especially the branch here in San Francisco, they have a very interesting program about, outreach and education. I'm not sure how effective it is, but they do have, whole department trying to address this very same issue. The Federal Reserve Bank is not the only one. I mean, there are even banks, commercial banks, are trying to address this, the unbanked, the underbank, and others, because they clearly understand that this is a serious matter. What I think needs to be addressed, I don't know if this could be taken by the Federal Reserve or not, but is to take a look on the regulation side of the equation. I mean, yeah, financial literacy is important, but I also think that, when you allow some financial institutions to lend money and charge over 100%, that needs to be seriously considered by our political representatives. So we don't need more regulation. We need more efficient regulation.
Okay. Well, up next, we're going to talk about the Federal Reserve and what it's doing to help the Valley and local communities in the areas of small business and workforce development. That conversation in a moment. This is the Matty Report.
From News Talk 580 1059 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. We're talking to Fresno State Economics Professor Antonio Avalos, Fresno EDC's Visker Brabiska, the Great Valley Center's Ben Duran, and Mike Dozier with the Fresno State Office of Economic and Community Development. So, Victor, let me go to you first. When we were spoken with Leilani Barnett, the regional manager of community development for the Federal Reserve Bank in San Francisco, she mentioned some of the activities the Fed is doing to assist small business. What kinds of support do entrepreneurs and small business owners in the Valley need to be successful?
Financial support. Mike did mention that we need there is a lack of venture capitalists and venture investment here, and there is. There's always a thought in the business community that banks are not lending, and if they do lend, they lend to the larger corporations, the ones that have great credit. But what about the small businesses, the ones that had to use a credit card to keep their doors open, the ones that are mom and pops or have one or two employees? They too need finances. Now it goes back to financial literacy. How do we educate our small businesses so they don't have to use their credit cards going forward in their shops? And the other thing I say is educational support. We need to have more educational support for businesses. SBA is doing a great job going out there, hitting the streets, and letting them know. The concern always is, at what time are they providing these educational workshops or seminars? If it's in the morning, the business owner, especially the small one's going to say, do I close my shop or do I go to the seminar? Or if it's in the evening, do I close my shop early so I can attend this seminar and educate myself? So it's always that ball juggling that they have to go through. But financial support and education is always doing it. Organizations that are putting a huge impact here, SBA, I mentioned, Workforce Investment Board, SBDC, OSED, the WET Center, Business Hub Downtown. Those are just a few that are doing support services to businesses in the local area.
You know, I want to ask Ben Duran with the Great Valley Center of Modesto, what do you think in terms of the kinds of support that entrepreneurs and small business people need to be successful?
Well, one of the things we're hearing up here is that the University of California here at Merced, University of California at Merced, has a fellow named Peter Schuerman, who's the Associate Vice Chancellor for Research and Economic Development. which is really, to me, really encouraging, because universities of California typically are research universities and don't get themselves as involved in local economic development. But they're actually developing a foundry, if you will, kind of a place where entrepreneurs, people from the gray economy, people from small businesses, and by the way, their professors, their own professors who are starting to come up with things, they just don't know how to market them. They're just not business people. They're actually creating a place where people can literally go in, all the way from the guy that's been working out of his garage or out of his trunk and wants to expand business, all the way to a university professor who hits a home run and wants to know how to market that. And they're actually putting that together. They're kicking that off here in Merced, and it'll be open, obviously, to anyone in the valley, anybody around. But it is that notion of taking these people and literally showing them not only how to put together business plans and how to go about doing that, but how to go out and seek venture capital. One of the things that we're hearing from the banks is, how do we invest in the Central Valley and improve the well-being of Valley residents, while at the same time, obviously, making some dollars for the banks? And there are other folks who are, I know Leilani is trying to bring some of the banks in to have those very conversations with local communities about how do you invest, how do you bring venture capital to the Valley. But I would refer people to UC Merced's efforts. I know Fresno State has an entrepreneur center there too, so I think between those two universities, there's an awful lot going on.
Oh, that's good. Well, Professor Avalos, you're at Fresno State. Let me ask you a question. It seems like, you know, obviously the best poverty program is a job. So what do you see when you take a look at the Valley's issues when it comes to unemployment? What do you see as the root cause of the Valley's persistently high unemployment rates?
Well, I mean, you probably have done this, but you can make an entire show off of this question. But as I mentioned, and let me take a different approach, I think one of the really, really important issues that I don't think we have addressed carefully is this negative incentive problem. I know we have talked about this, but to attract and retain both businesses that offer good-paying jobs and workers that offer knowledge and talent, we must address these disincentives, this poor air quality, lack of specialty medical services, and others, before they can move in. I mean, I know for experience, friends and relatives that say, you know, my children have asthma. I would like to stay, but I can't. I mean, we're talking about engineers, people in the financial industry, and they move out of the Valley. And you know, this is producing a very serious brain drain that is one, in my judgment, one of the main contributors to this, persistent and high unemployment rate.
Yeah, that actually has been a challenge when we're trying to recruit at the university. Sometimes folks from other parts of the country are hesitant to move here because of the air quality issues and things of that nature. But let's talk about the other end of the continuum. Victor, I want to go back to you. You were talking about educational support.
Yes.
Folks that we've got a lot of workers here, but not necessarily trained the right way with the right skills.
Correct.
Is that a big problem?
Yes. We have a company that's coming in saying, Vic, you know, we want to place a plant in Fresno area. However, our plant requires robotics. We don't need engineers. We don't need sophisticated technicians or a high degree of education. But what kind of individuals do you have that you can send over? Once they look at the workforce and once they do their studies, they know that they cannot train an individual in the time necessary in order for the plant to go up in time. And so what we're doing now is we're going back out to the market and asking them, what is it that you need? How can we get you to Fresno County so that you can set up shop and get you the right workforce? If you say, you know, I need truck drivers. Let's take that industry, for example. I need 450 truck drivers. What can you do? We'll find those individuals that are interested in working, looking to get a license, and wanting to get into that industry. We'll train them, get them back into the workforce with the knowledge to the company that these people are coming. But are you willing to hire them even though they don't have that significant amount of experience that you said you originally wanted?
Right.
And the companies are saying, absolutely, because they need the people.
You know, I've heard, Mike Dozier, I've heard you talk about this fact that Fresno has kind of taken a strategy of kind of a low-skill, low-wage strategy to attract business. And what are your thoughts on that? Is that not helpful? Because ultimately, then, we're going to have to compete with other lower-wage places?
I don't think that Fresno is doing that. I think they're taking another look at it, and I think from the standpoint of a regional perspective, exactly what Victor's talking about is what we've been looking at is what's the aggregate. You got a lot of industries that individually will tell you that I need this, I need that, I need this. But as a university professor, you well know that you can't establish a curriculum based on one industry saying that they need two widget makers. But if you have, and community colleges are in the same situation, as are the WIBs, as are the high schools. But if you have a continuum of industries saying, I need these workers, I need these workers, and they come in one, and all of a sudden those two widget makers in this industry and the 10 widget makers in this industry, you'll find somebody that will be able to provide the training for widget makers. And that's what we're trying to do, is make a forum for the business sector and the service providers, whether they be the EDCs, the WIBs, the community colleges, universities, for them to listen to each other and tell us what it is you need. But for that to be successful, it's contingent on the business, the private sector, to come and participate in this. And sometimes that's very difficult to do.
Okay, well, we're going to do a rapid-fire thing here, a question, a kind of a summation of all of this, of economic development. And if you're looking at the long term, what actions do you think we need to take in Valley communities to improve economic development? So we'll start with you, Mike Dozier, with the Fresno State's Office of Economic and Community Development.
Okay, well, education's key. And when I say education, I don't mean just a college education, but when you look at college attainment, that will tell you how robust that economy is. When you look at our area, we have 17% university college attainment. We have something like 70% of high school graduates. The more you can make that number go higher, the better off we're going to be, and it's going to be easier because we'll have that quality workforce.
I think Mike Dozier just filibustered, and we're running out of time here, so I'm going to have to ask very quickly, give me one word or two words at most as to what we need to do to improve economic development in the Valley. Go ahead, Victor.
Workforce development and education. I do agree with Mike.
Okay. Professor Avalos?
Human capital, both education and health, they reinforce each other. They are joint investments with great returns.
Okay, and Ben Duran with the Great Valley Center.
Yes, education and building capable communities that are able to advocate on their behalf with respect to what they need for economic development.
Well, I want to thank all of our guests for joining us. If you want to keep up to date with state and local politics, you can sign up for our free e-newsletter, The Maddie Daily, by just logging on to our website at maddieinstitute.org.
The Maddie Report Valley Views Edition is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio and the nonpartisan Maddie Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on important public policy issues.
This is Mark Kepler for the Maddie Report Valley Views Edition. Thanks for joining us.